Hello and welcome to Mouse Chat for Friday, June 3rd, 2011. I'm Lisa, and joining me today are Chris and Bob. Welcome.
Hi there.
Hello.
It's just so lonely. We keep dwindling.
I know. It's really sad.
Yeah, we've got to get Steve back, and Natalie's just kind of a part-timer, and Lauren has an event tonight with the end of school, so...
But on the plus side, I'm back.
Yes. Oh, we have Bob back. Yay.
So all is right in the world again.
It is.
Everything is balanced. It's good. On today's show, we will be bringing you news from around Disney. We will end the show with a couple of listener questions. And we're going to start off today's show with announcements. And today's announcement is going to be coming from Bob, and he'll do a review of his recent trip to Disney World and his experience with the Star Wars weekends. Go ahead, Bob.
All right. So, yes, I did have the opportunity to spend the last 2 weekends, actually, at Star Wars weekends, but just recently, this past weekend, spent a couple days there for the Memorial Day holiday. And for anyone that's not familiar with Star Wars weekends, this is an event that Disney runs every year, generally the last 2 weeks of May and the first 2 weeks of June, but they're only done on the weekends, hence the name Star Wars Weekends. So every Friday, Saturday, and Sunday. And you have tons of character greetings with Star Wars characters, you know, people in costume. You have actors from the movies that make appearances and will sign autographs. There's a celebrity motor car parade with these actors. There's presentations regarding Star Wars and the Star Wars universe and Clone Wars and all that kind of stuff, and tons of event merchandise. And of course, the big thing this year is the reopening of Star Tours, The Adventure Continues. So if you are at all a Star Wars fan, or you have someone in your home that's a Star Wars fan, this is really a terrific event. I have to say I'm kind of surprised, and maybe it was because of the holiday weekend, but the crowds the past weekend were actually heavier than opening weekend. So keep that in mind, you know, if you're going. Obviously, it's summer season, and it's going to be crowded, and it's going to be very, very warm. If you are looking to get autographs from the celebrities that are there, and Disney typically does a good job of announcing who they are well in advance, so you'll know. You know, you can get fast passes for those characters and those actors, and you know, wait in the return at a certain time and get those fast passes. That's not something we did. You have to get there very, very early to get those fast passes. But it appeals to a lot of people. I've heard stories of people that have waited hours, even camped out overnight in some cases, to get, you know, autographs from people like Anthony Daniels or Ray Park, who was Darth Maul in The Phantom Menace. And, of course, Anthony Daniels being C-3PO. The big attraction, everybody, like I said, is the new Star Tours ride, and that is simply amazing. Disney really hit it out of the park with this one. Having been closed for 9 months, it reopened with a brand new queue line, but also a brand new ride itself. It is now in 3D, but it's not the eye-popping 3D that you would normally think of. In most cases, the 3D just adds a sense of depth and perception to the ride. If you've seen movies like Toy Story 3 in theaters and you saw what that looked like in 3D, that's a very good... that'll give you a good idea of what the movie looks like. I think the motion in the ride is much more enhanced than it was in the original Star Tours. What's also different about the ride this time is that there are 54 different possible combinations to your ride. So there are different openings, different destinations that you can go to in the middle of the attraction, and a couple of different endings. So you would actually have to ride for 6 hours straight to experience all these different combinations. I've had the opportunity over the past couple of weeks to ride it about 7 times, and we visited the Death Star. We got chased by Boba Fett. Visited Naboo and the underwater planet there. Very, very cool. Experienced a battle on Hoth, which is awesome, one of the best. And to paraphrase, Weird Al Yankovic finally got to Coruscant after my seventh ride and got to experience that part of the attraction. All of them are really, really super. Some of the inside jokes that you might see on the ride, Captain Rex is no longer the pilot because the new Star Tours ride takes place earlier than the last Star Tours. So Captain Rex is actually in a box to be sent back, and it's marked defective. And you'll see him talking to people as you're waiting on the queue line. There's a robot scanning luggage as you're waiting in the queue line, and you'll see things on the screen like Chip and Dale plushies. Madame Leota gets scanned through at one point, and he'll make a comment about that. Mickey Mouse gets scanned through. So different cute little elements like that that you can see and kind of laugh about while you're passing time on the line. Do expect the lines to be long. They were typically anywhere from, say, 45 minutes on the low end to almost 100 minutes on the high end from what I saw. Again, if you can get there early, grab a fast pass, and then get in line, that might be something better to do. By early afternoon hours, the fast passes were the fast pass return time was already 10 o'clock, 11 o'clock at night. So definitely, so definitely plan to get there early. And when you're standing in a line. No, you don't expect that. And when you're standing in a line for 60 minutes in the hot sun, because a lot of it is outside, you know, at first, and even in the shade, it still gets very, very warm. When you finally do make it inside and up to the front of the attraction, you know, you'll stand in your row there waiting to board, watch the little movie screen, you know, the television screen with the instructions and things, because it'll tell you the whole little story and it will explain why C-3PO is now your pilot. So there's a little story behind that. And as an inside joke, if you all remember from the original ride, the character who gave the instructions in the first attraction, you know, that no flash photography and secure your seatbelts and whatnot, she is now a passenger on the new ride. So you'll see her in the show. So that's a little inside gag there. And just an amazing attraction. In all the times we rode, of course, there were tons of Star Wars fans in line for it, but I didn't hear one person get off and say, oh, it was terrible or I hated it. Everybody was very, very excited to ride and to ride again and just experience it as many times. And, oh, where did you go? And, oh, I can't wait to do that one. And
Bob, is there a lot of conversation in the lines? You know, whether it's just, you know, Star Wars trivia or talking about the ride, you know, people that have already ridden it.
Definitely, yeah. I mean, especially with Star Wars weekends and because a lot of people come to the park dressed up as characters too. So they strike up conversation. But yes, you definitely hear a lot of chatter about, you know, where people have been. Or one part of the ride that you'll see is someone on board each flight is the rebel spy, and that plays a big role in the storyline. So, you know, people are talking about, oh, I was the rebel spy, or, oh, I want to be the rebel spy this time. I hope I get chosen. People are looking for hidden jokes and hidden things. I mean, I'm a big Star Wars fan, but I'm probably not a giant Star Wars fan. You know, I would never come to the park dressed like Anakin Skywalker or any other, you know, character for that matter. But there are people like that. And I know that, you know, the ride Imagineers have said that for those truly dedicated diehard fans, there's a lot to see and a lot of details that you'll notice that make you want to ride over and over again. But
those who know the movies inside and out, forward
exactly.
and backwards.
But it's for me, it was wanting to get on that ride as many times as possible to see, you know, the different combinations. You know, are we going to get the Death Star this time? Are we going to end up on Hoth again? Or the pod race on Tatooine, which I think I've done four times now, which is very cool. And, you know, are you going to get, you know, the message from Yoda or the message from Princess Leia? Or, you know, is Darth Vader going to be, you know, in the beginning of the ride, or is it going to be the stormtroopers? And so there's all these different combinations. A huge, definitely a huge attraction and a big draw. And they really, as I said, they did a great job with the redesign on this ride, and I think it's going to be popular for a long time. Of course, the other thing that people come to see are all of the characters and to have their pictures taken and whatnot. And I think Disney has done a better job this year than in years past, to my recollection at least, of having characters all around the park, it seemed. They were walking around the back lot. They were walking around, obviously, by the Star Wars attraction, by the, you know, New York back lot area. They were there. And you'll see, I saw Ahsoka Tano from the Clone Wars, Ventress from the Clone Wars, Commander Cody and Captain Rex from the Clone Wars. Anakin Skywalker was out doing meet and greets. Jawas were there. Chewie and Ewok were there doing meet and greets. Jango Fett and Boba Fett, Darth Vader was doing meet and greets and looks very, very menacing. and he kind of refuses to. It's funny to see him interact with kids because they'll, you know, present their little autograph book and he'll just stare at them and won't sign right away. It's very cute. So plenty of photo opportunities with all of these characters. And if you're into seeing any of these presentations, you know, just, you know, look at your park, you know, map for the day that has the show times and make sure to attend them. The Celebrity Motor Car Parade, it started at 12:40 every day, and by 11 o'clock people were taking their seats on Hollywood Boulevard. So I didn't wait for it. It was just way too hot to sit there for an hour and a half. But we did see plenty of the parade just walking past outside of Star Tours where it was ending. So got a bunch of pictures that I hope to upload soon of various stormtroopers and other Star Wars characters. And, of course, among the other Star Wars characters is you have Disney characters dressed up like Star Wars characters. So you have Minnie as Princess Leia and Jedi Mickey as Luke with R2-MK, his little droid. Who's wearing mouse ears. Very, very cute.
R2-MK.
R2-MK. And he's got mouse ears with his little R2-MK, you know, stitched onto the back. It's adorable. And it moves and it beeps and it looks around and stuff. Very cool. So I would totally do Star Wars weekends again. I mean, it's a big event. It's a popular event. I enjoy it every year. But I think they did a really good job of you know, getting fans there and you know, having stuff for them to do and plenty of merchandise, shirts, towels, autographed pictures, Legos, books, throws, toys. In fact, over this past weekend, there was a line for people who just wanted to get into the gift shop. Attached to the Star Tours ride. So it actually wrapped around and it looked like it was a 30 to 40 minute wait just to get into the gift shop if you weren't going on the ride. So you may have to plan for that. And the event merchandise for Star Wars Weekend is at Jabba's Hut, which this year is in a area behind Rock and Roller Coaster. So if you head in that direction, you'll see, you know, Star Wars Weekend shirts and posters and mugs and more toys and collectibles. And you'll see some of the collectibles if you go to www.artofdisneyparks.com. You'll see some of the stuff that is available, some of the artwork that is available, and some of the mini figurines that are limited edition. So
have you seen a lot of new, you know, the introduction of new gifts and items, paraphernalia, memorabilia with the introduction of the new ride?
You know, surprisingly, no.
Kind of more of the same stuff?
It looked like more of the same stuff, even though Disney had said there are new items. I mean, I didn't see any shirts or things that said, you know, Star Tours, The Adventure Continues, or anything like that. And the Star Wars Weekends shirts just say Star Wars Weekends 2011 and have the 2011 logo. I'm sure some of that merchandise is probably coming. You know, the Star Speeder 1000 toys, I would imagine, are coming and things like that. But I didn't really see a lot of that. I would fully expect to see it coming in the future, but then too, I may have missed it because the stores were packed. So, you know, you get off this ride and it's just jammed with people and you kind of want to just head to the exit, you know, and get out of the store because it's hot.
Because you need oxygen.
Yes, exactly. Yes. I need air to breathe. Yeah. I enjoy breathing. Yes. But yeah, I mean, there's no limit to the amount of Star Wars merchandise. And of course, you know, that store also has the build your own lightsaber in it too, which it's had for some time now. So of course that's a big draw for people there.
It kind of is fun, I have to admit.
Yeah, I mean the whole event is a lot of fun. I mean, even
I like the lightsabers.
Yeah, I mean, and you certainly see you know, people walking around with them and stuff. I love the new Jedi robes. I love because they have, you know, they say Jedi Training Academy, but the hood has Mickey ears on it, and I just love.
Oh, how cute!
Yeah, and they have them in adult sizes too, so I'm very.
Do they have them for people well over 6 feet tall?
Well, unfortunately, I only found the ones in kid sizes, and you should have seen me trying to squeeze into a.
I wish I could have.
it just doesn't look right. I look very buff though in it.
Wow.
You know, yeah, that was cool. But I think I could probably find something there that would I could pull off, and then make my own lightsaber, and I'd be good to go.
Yeah, Bob, you'd be good to go.
Yeah, but yeah, I mean, you know, you can't help, even if you just come for the Star Tours ride, just to see what it's all about, the new ride, you can't but get caught up in all of the excitement and the action. I mean, because everywhere you walk around that area, you're going to run into characters and you know, you're going to see Darth Vader, you're going to see the Stormtroopers, you're going to see Chewbacca and stuff. And you may not know their names if you're not familiar with the movies, but you know, there's no shortage of people following them, taking pictures and trying to get caught up in the hoopla. And speaking of hoopla.
I was going to say, but you're saying that, you know, people are following these guys around. As far as seeing the characters, can you call them characters? They're in designated areas, correct?
Some of them are. The ones that do meet and greets, like Mickey and Minnie and Chewbacca. Darth Vader has a standard set area with a line. Jango and Boba Fett have an area. The Jawas I saw walking around just on the back lot. Same thing with a bunch of Stormtroopers just walking around on the back lot. Commander Cody and Captain Rex and Ahsoka Tano were all posing together. So that was cool because you could line up and get a picture with all three at the same time. So that was a good idea. I did see Ventress just walking around, but it could just be that, you know, they're walking from one area to the next. But, you know, yes, you do have these throngs of people following them and taking pictures and, you know, trying to touch them and stuff. So
Do you think or can you tell us what you think it'll be like when it's not kind of branded a Disney Star Wars weekend?
I think, of course, the Jedi Training Academy runs all the time now, so that's always popular. I think what you're going to see is continuing crowds for Star Tours, because given that it's not the same ride every time, or it's potentially not the same ride every time, you're going to have people wanting to ride over and over and over again. So I think if that's on your to-do list, either get to the park early and grab a fast pass, or plan to, you know, be prepared to wait online, you know, anywhere from 45 minutes to, you know, 80 minutes, 100 minutes, you know, depending on what time of day. And interestingly enough, I thought that, you know, the opening of Star Tours would lessen some of the crowds at Toy Story Mania, because I figured that would draw some of the people over there. And it has not. Even when the line to the new Star Tours was at 45 minutes, 50 minutes, the line for Toy Story Mania was at 80 minutes, and I think at one point during the day got up to 110 minutes. So, and I think the reason
I
for this...
I can't imagine.
Yeah, I can't imagine sitting there in that line for that long either, but I think the reason the line hasn't gone down is, first of all, there's a ride restriction. There's a height requirement at Star Tours of at minimum 40 inches to ride. And the other thing is not everybody likes Star Wars, and not everybody likes motion effects. So, if you're not into motion and being tossed around a little bit, that may not be the ride for you. But whereas, you know, anybody can go on Toy Story Mania.
You were talking about the 3D effects, or, you know, for lack of a better term, and I've found, I don't know what my problem is. Maybe I'm just too realistic. I rarely can actually feel the 3D effects where you want to reach out in front of you and touch something. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I'm quite envious of the people that can lose themselves in the 3D effects.
And see, the 3D effects in this are more not like that. There's very little...
They're enhancements.
Yes, they're enhancements. It would almost look... the picture looks decent, just a little blurry if you take off the 3D glasses, mm-hmm. you know. But when you put them on, yes, the picture looks sharper and crisper. Every once in a while, they'll throw something at you that, gives you the true 3D, or what people traditionally think of as 3D. Mm-hmm. I don't want to ruin it, but there's a portion of, if you end up in Naboo, there's a portion where something happens, and there's a very, very good 3D effect there. But there's also a decent 3D effect in the pod race. For the most part, it's just about enhancement and making the picture look sharper. So it's not 3D in the way of like PhilharMagic.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, but definitely a winner for Disney. A very, very, very good job. And of course, they end every Star Wars weekends, I was saying, Hoopla with the Hyperspace Hoopla, which I think Chris may have talked about last week. I don't know. I know Chris saw it.
I did a little bit. It was pretty good. I mean, the biggest issue, and you wouldn't have gone through this because you're really tall, but if you're not 5'10 or above, you're just having a hard time seeing anything. And we were up in the front. We couldn't see anything hardly. But what we saw, we liked.
Yeah, the Hyperspace Hoopla is basically a Star Wars dance-off competition. And so you'll see various characters come out and dance. The Cantina band plays. They do a little skit with, you know, Stump the Band. The Emperor kind of does like a dance off, and I think Chewbacca dances. And so a cute, probably 40 minute show to end, mm-hmm. end the evening. And that is done in front of the Sorcerer's Hat around 7:45 in the evening.
Right, they changed the stage, so they have a bigger stage this year. And I believe the show is different this year a little bit, the different music. It was really cute. I mean, I did enjoy it. It was just hard because, you know, they don't have anything set up so that people can really kind of like bleachers or something so everyone could see. So you're just all sort of standing there in this mass, you know, group.
Crowd,
and
yeah.
It's hot and, you know, but it was a really good show. I mean, they always, you know... That was impressive.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it doesn't fail to entertain. And if anybody is curious, wants to see what it's about, just go to YouTube and type in Hyperspace Hoopla 2011, and you'll see the show mm-hmm. this year. It is good for a few laughs and a good way to end, you know, Star Wars weekends each night. But, yeah, I think the crowds will continue at Star Tours for quite some time.
I just have one thing. If I could add one thing to what you said, I really enjoy Star Wars. I don't know that I really enjoyed Star Wars Weekend that much. You know, I think that if you're not, I mean, I've enjoyed the movies. I've read, you know, some of the expanded universe series. So I'm a little you know, I'm a bit of a nerd when it comes to Star Wars. I don't know. I mean, the crowds were really bad, I thought. You know, I think that I would have enjoyed it maybe if it had been, you know, a little easier to see the characters and stuff.
Well, it was, you know, kind of a trade-off because you were there the first weekend, and as was I, and the first weekend was very hot. I think it hit 95, 96 in Orlando.
Yeah, it was really hot.
And possibly 97 on Sunday that weekend. So it was very hot, even though the crowds were less than they were this week. This weekend, this past weekend, the crowds were heavier, even though it was, you know, supposedly cooler, 90, 91. It was still pretty miserable in terms of bring your patience, definitely.
Right, bring your patience. And if you're not a big fan, if you're just someone who's seen the movies and you're like, ah, neat, Star Wars weekend, but you're not a big fan, don't go. Stay in the other parks, I think. Because it'll probably
just be more hassle than it's worth.
If you want to check
hustle
out
and bustle
the,
and
yeah, if you want to check out the ride, do it
on another day.
Do it on another day, exactly, yeah. You know, because even after the hyperspace hoopla is over, you know, the park, Hollywood Studios stayed open until midnight on each mm-hmm. of those nights. And there were still tons of people in Jedi costumes and stuff going to the parks, wanting to ride the rides, just try to, you know, stretch out that time as much as possible. So yeah, definitely, you know, I think that is good advice. If you're just a so-so fan or you know, somebody who's seen the movies once or twice, yeah, you know, check out the rides on a different day.
It's good
day.
Advice, definitely.
So, but yeah, totally a good experience. I mean, I like Star Wars. I think it's a very creative story. I've seen the movies a bunch of times. I'll get them on Blu-ray. I'm not going to dress up, like I said, like, you know, a Jedi or a Wookiee or anything else. And I did put a Darth Vader mask over my head because they had one at the store that you could buy. And it was just cheap plastic, but I have a new respect for David Prowse after doing that, because after about 2 minutes, that was very uncomfortable.
What is that noise?
That was my phone.
Oh, it sounds like a foghorn.
It vibrated on the desk.
So yeah, that's Star Wars weekend. So, I mean, if any of our listeners were there and want to share their thoughts and experiences, I mean, I'd certainly love to hear them. I think we'd love to hear them and see what you thought, you know, mm-hmm. what you thought of the new Star Tours attraction, you know, did you like it? Did you hate it? You know?
I've heard such good things about it. And you know what? I might have enjoyed the whole weekend better if I'd actually gotten a chance to go in there. But my 8-year-old wasn't into it, so we skipped that.
That's just wrong.
I know. He's kind of intimidated by some rides, so we don't push it.
Okay. Very good. Well, Bob, you also stayed somewhere special this time.
I did. I wanted to try something different. And so rather than stay on property at a Disney resort, I know as a gasp escapes the crowd. My wife and I stayed at the Waldorf Astoria, which is in Bonnet Creek. For those listeners who don't know where Bonnet Creek is or what Bonnet Creek is, Bonnet Creek Resort is an area in the, I guess, downtown resort area, near Typhoon Lagoon. Close to that, I would say. You know, you may have even seen it driving through or you know, from your Disney bus. You'll see a traffic light and there's a sign that says Bonnet Creek Resort. And if you make a left and go down that road, there's a whole bunch of hotels. The Wyndham Resort area is down there. There's a Hilton, which is part of the Waldorf company, and then the Waldorf Hotel itself. And there are, I would say, after spending, you know, a couple nights, there are pros and cons to it. On the positive side, it was a fantastic Florida resident rate. I mean,
tell us how much.
It was $149 a night for Florida residents over Memorial Day weekend.
Wow.
As compared to, you know, let's say a deluxe Disney resort, like the Yacht Club. With the Florida resident rate over the same weekend was about $350 a night. So, big difference, yeah. gorgeous, absolutely stunning hotel. I was actually kind of embarrassed to be driving my PT Cruiser up to the hotel because there was, you know, there were multiple town cars, a Lexus, a Mercedes, a BMW, and us. So that was a little bit embarrassing. And I think we only saw one American car the entire weekend. The hotel itself is extremely opulent. There is marble everywhere. I think a quarry in Italy has been depleted by the amount of marble in this hotel, and even in your room, there is marble. There's a marble entryway and all marble in the bathroom. So it is very, very elegant. And of course, you know, when you pull up, the valets run up and they, you know, they have to open the door for you and, you know, welcome, you know, welcome to the Waldorf, you know, whatnot. The standard rooms are huge. It's a standard room there is 445 square feet.
Wow. And that's compared to Disney Deluxe Resorts at like 380?
Yeah. Or maybe slightly larger. I mean, some of the deluxe resorts might be a little bit bigger, 403 maybe. But
I'm
going to
go into that.
But yeah, I think you're right. I mean, so significantly larger, very well furnished. As I said, you know, an extremely heavy door, which I think dampens the noise. It's so heavy, in fact, that I don't think a small child could actually even open the door. It's that heavy. But you open the door and it's a large marble foyer and then you have your bedroom area with a huge king bed and a 42-inch television, a Blu-ray player, luxurious bed and bed linens, and then a couch and a desk with, you know, a chair. So huge. I mean, and a very massive bathroom with both a separate shower and a soaking tub.
Mm-hmm.
And a shower that
sounds
was large
like a deluxe
enough,
villa.
Yeah, I mean, it was, and it was a bathroom, a glass shower that, you know, even being 6 foot six, I could stand in without ducking. So that's different. I mean, I really appreciated that. And
just for comparison's sake, I did find Yacht Club comes in at 380, Boardwalk's coming in at 434 square feet. So.
Okay, so
just
Boardwalk
for, you know, frame of reference.
Okay, so Boardwalk would be about the closest, but I mean, my last apartment in Orlando was 600 something square feet. So I walked in and I thought, wow, this is almost as big as, you know, where I used to live. So it is very nice. And then, you know, the closet, you open up the closet door and the light turns on automatically.
Nice.
They keep an umbrella in there for your use in case the weather, you know, turns bad. It's standard. You know, evening turndown service, they put down by your bed a towel and they lay out slippers for each person in the room. And they put a little card by your bed with an inspirational quote, two chocolates, and the weather forecast. So you know the next day's weather, and you can prepare.
If you need to use that umbrella or not.
Yes, exactly. you know, and you know, every time you call for anything, you know, it's you know, hello, Mr. and Mrs. Angelo. You know, thank you for calling the Waldorf Astoria. You know, valet service. Thank you for calling room service. How may we assist you? So they always greet you by name.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, did that make you uncomfortable?
It did, because I Mr. Angelo to me was my father.
Mm-hmm.
You know.
How about Mr. Bob? Are you do you get called that at all?
Yes, but usually by young kids.
Yeah.
But yes, I have been called Mr. Bob. but Mr. Bill.
Oh no.
Exactly. So yeah, that was a little uncomfortable, and you can tell by the type of people that stay there that I think they're used to it. You know, it just seems like a very high caliber of guest, just judging by the cars too. You know, people always worry about at Disney. Gosh, if I stay at the Grand Floridian, I'm not going to fit in.
Right.
And that's not the case. I mean, everybody, you know, fits in at the Grand Floridian. I really felt kind of like a fish out of water at the Waldorf. Even the children were very, very well behaved. You really didn't see children yelling or screaming. You don't hear noise in the hallways. You don't hear kids running down the hallways. At the pool area, you know, they have these three large pools, but they have one pool with that is more shallow that kids tend to hang out in. But you don't hear noise and screaming and yelling and, like, you know, it's not typical of what you would see. So that was different too. One of the coolest features I thought though was, we came back to the hotel one night at about 1 a.m. and we're walking through and the lights in the lobby area were of course dimmed and we're walking towards, the elevators and, down this hallway and we stopped to look at something in one of the glass display cases and a motion sensor sensed that we were standing there and the lights all turned on throughout the lobby area, just so we could see what, you know, what was in the case, which is a very nice feature.
Fancy.
Yeah. So I mean, very, 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 very fancy. A couple of downsides to this resort, and things that people should know. First of all, there is a valet fee charged daily, and they don't tell you this until you have booked and paid for at least one night stay. And then it's not exactly clear. I mean, it says it in the reservation confirmation, valet fee, $20 daily, but it doesn't, you know, it's not clear whether you can self-park or not. The answer is no. I mean, you can self-park next door at the Hilton, but then you would have to pay every time at the Hilton going in and out of their parking garage, and they would still charge you the $20 fee at the Waldorf. On top of that $20 fee is a parking resort fee and parking tax and everything else. So
your $149 a night room ended up?
Well, those 2 days with a valet fee cost another $67 just for those 2 nights. So another – it was really like $179 a night or $180 a night. Still less than possibly, you know, staying on property, but –
No one likes that. I mean, that's like junk fees with airline tickets.
Exactly, and that was kind of
just
unpleasant.
Just tell me what it's going to cost.
Exactly, and the fact that you can't self-park, I find annoying because every time you wanted your car to go somewhere, you had to call down, you know, to valet, and of course they were very pleasant about getting the car, but, we're very busy, it'll take 30 minutes. Wow. So you're at their mercy to get your vehicle. So I also, you know, didn't care for that. And I don't know what the rule is here, and maybe some of our listeners can chime in on this, or what would Ann Landers do kind of thing. If you're paying a valet fee, are you expected to tip the person who is bringing you your car every time?
I'm not used to this kind of service, so I wouldn't know either.
I didn't know what was proper. I mean, I felt like, why am I tipping these people if I'm already paying a daily fee? What is the valet fee?
Well, Bob,
going towards
when you order a pizza and there's a fee for delivery, they always tell you that tipping is not a part of that. You know, this doesn't go to the driver. So I bet they're going to say, yeah, you need to tip on top of that fee.
Well, then I feel bad.
I would say you need to tip.
I'm not saying it's right. I'm not saying it's wrong. I'm just saying that's probably the answer.
Now, well,
I
don't know. I mean,
and ask them.
I'm just kind of curious. I mean, I'd actually like feedback from some listeners to see, you know, would you tip? I mean, do you think it's proper to tip? Should I have tipped?
Yeah, you should tip. Honestly, you should. It's anytime you valet park, you always tip, you know, even if you are paying, because they don't make very much money and they are handling your car.
Yeah. I felt like I was valet parking because I didn't have a choice.
Right. You know, and that is kind of frustrating, but, you know, as far as just the general etiquette for that, you tip them.
Chris, did you do something funny?
So maybe I should have paid for that. Now of course, if you don't have a vehicle.
So you didn't pay.
I didn't. I stopped tipping after the first couple of days because it was annoying. Every time we wanted to run out, you know, having to tip. So yeah, I honestly stopped. Plus, I didn't prepare for that. I was not expecting to have to valet park my car.
Yeah.
I should have. I've never stayed at the Waldorf or anything like that. So now I know. Another downside, of course, you don't now with transportation, you don't have to have a car, of course. I mean, if you're arriving into town, I mean, I'm sure you can arrange for transportation to the Waldorf. And they do have a shuttle bus for the Hilton and the Waldorf that they use. It runs every half hour to the Magic Kingdom. Pros and cons to the Waldorf. If you're used to being immersed in the Disney feel, it may not be the resort for you because you're not going to get have a magical day. You're not going to see the Disney hidden Mickeys everywhere. You're not going to have the benefits of the magic hours and shipping to the resorts and things. But there are a lot of upsides to it. I mean, it is a very upscale, luxurious resort. They are super nice in the way they treat their guests, and it is a great location. So, don't necessarily rule out Bonnet Creek and don't rule out the Waldorf, especially if you can get a great rate as a Florida resident or otherwise.
Sounds good. All right. Let's move on to some news real quick. Chris, you have a story for us tonight?
The Phineas and Ferb meet and greet has just opened at Hollywood Studios. It opened on Sundays, and they'll be there from 10:30 to 2 and 3 to 5:30 daily. And they're located at the exit of at Muppet Vision 3D.
Oh, that's a good place.
Yep. It's right near the studio store there. And the line was pretty busy all day long. Got some pictures from the background when we were there.
I do that sometimes. It's like, oh, yeah, okay, I just want a picture of them. I don't have to be in the picture. This works.
Yeah, it was looked like they were having a good time. And for right now, it's just Phineas and Ferb. But who knows? Maybe if it really takes off, they'll introduce some of the other characters.
Who would you like to see?
But yeah. I would love to see Doofenshmirtz.
I just wanted to hear one of your Doofenshmirtz impersonations.
I think we can skip that tonight.
Tease.
But yes, I would like to see.
Come on, I want to hear about your innatinator.
The theme park and I can't do the voice now. I got to be in Penny the Platypus with my theme parkinator. I don't know. It's such a silly show, but I love it anyway.
Very good.
But yeah, that is there, and that is running, and the line looked to be about. A constant 30-minute wait from what I saw. I mean, the line
That's
never
not
went
bad.
Down. But no. But I don't know how many people knew it was open because I think it was right now like a soft opening, mm-hmm. like they're testing it out to see, I guess, if that location works and hours and things. But yeah, they had a good crowd and it looks cute. They were very interactive with the families that we saw there. So I think it's going to be very, very popular.
Okay, Bob, you have a piece of news as well.
Yes, it's not Disney, but it is theme park related for the Orlando area. The reports are that Comcast plans to fully own Universal theme parks. The report is that they are intending to buy the Blackstone Group's half of Universal Orlando Resort. For anywhere between $1 to $1.5 billion to become full owner of the complex, and they have until June 12th to make an offer on the park. Otherwise, Blackstone Group can solicit bids for the whole complex. Universal Orlando has been doing remarkably well. This past quarter, attendance was up 68% over the same time last year.
Wow!
Largely due in part to the success of. The Wizarding World of Harry Potter, and
largely
they show no signs of slowing down. So, yeah, well, basically
entirely?
All due to the Wizarding World of Harry Potter. Yes. Well, I was trying to, give them the benefit of the doubt. Yes.
Wow.
But yeah, obviously, Wizarding World of Harry Potter has to do with that, and that doesn't show signs of stopping anytime soon. In fact, it seems to just keep getting busier there. This would probably be a very wise investment for Comcast, and since they already own 50%, why not purchase the whole thing? So We'll see what happens with that. But yeah, that's what's going on with Universal.
Okay. I don't have any news for today. It was a pretty slow week in news, so we'll cut the news off here. And we're going to start with our topic. And our topic this week, we've actually had a couple requests for some more top five lists. So we're going to do another top five. And today's topic is going to be top five misconceptions about Walt Disney World, Walt Disney World Resort. And we're going to have some fun with this. And Lauren was so upset she couldn't be here. And she's like, oh, I couldn't do my 5.5 things list. And she was all excited to do another list. And it's just not going to happen. So sorry, Lauren. But Chris, why don't you give us one of your misconceptions?
Okay. One of my misconceptions is sort of a silly one, but a lot of people will go into Epcot and they'll want to see the full replica of the Eiffel Tower. And the fact is, it's just a portion of it, and it's on top of a building. So it's all kind of playing tricks with your eyes. It's not really there. You can't go back and see it.
I don't think I ever thought about that.
You know what? I'll be honest. The first time I went to Epcot, I was like, where's the rest of it? Can we go back there? So it's not just me,
well,
though.
France is small. I think France
is.
Well, I guess it's no smaller than any other.
No. Is it? I don't know. It's a little small, I guess.
Yeah. I think it is, because I'm thinking of China and Japan.
Right, or Morocco,
Italy's
which is pretty big.
Japan's, yeah.
Italy's big, too.
Yeah, I think France is.
I'd say France is shallow.
So France, yeah.
I think they did it on purpose. But, take that, you French people.
Okay.
But you know what? They have those wonderful Grey Goose orange slushies for sale there.
Those are good.
And yes, those are.
Wait, those are the Grand.
Grand.
Oh, you're
no,
right. It is. Never mind. They're not orange though.
Yeah. Yeah.
Are they?
There's a Grey Goose.
I don't know.
Slush,
I was drunk.
And there's a Grand Marnier.
Okay. Yeah.
Well
okay,
maybe
Bob.
That's why you think the Eiffel Tower.
Bob, what do you have?
Oh. One of my top fives is that people have a misconception that traveling to Walt Disney World or planning a trip to Walt Disney World is too expensive. And so you hear that a lot, that I'm never going to be able to go because it's going to cost thousands upon thousands of dollars. And the reality is, for one thing, you know, you can actually book well in advance and put down a small deposit and then just pay over time without penalty. So, you know, Disney does allow that. You know, you can make regular payments if that's what you choose.
Makes it hurt less.
But yes, yeah. I mean, you know, and a lot of people do that. You know, they just set up auto deductions or something to make a payment, you know, every pay period. But the other thing is that when you compare, you know, and you price out a Disney vacation versus, you know, some of these other destinations that, you know, trips that you may take to a beach house or a cross-country trip or a ski trip or whatever you want to do on your vacation, Disney comes out about the same or even less.
If you play the promotions right, they're pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, depending on where you stay and what time of year you go and you know, what promotion you may take advantage of. Yeah, I mean, it can be a very, very affordable trip. So it's definitely not too expensive. I mean, there's a lot of ways to reduce costs, but I think people have a misconception that it's somehow out of their budget and they'll never, ever get there.
I mean, I would say that I book a lot of $2,000 vacations, $2,000 or even a little less. And that's a family of four for a week, which I think is totally, totally reasonable. So it doesn't have to be this big $5,000, $6,000 vacation. Although it can be, and if it is, give me a call.
Yeah.
I'm kidding.
I'd like to go. No, I can't spend $6,000 on a Disney vacation.
No, we never spend that much. I mean, you know, we definitely book those kind of vacations. I personally don't spend that when I go.
No.
So it's definitely, you can make it be affordable.
I think you could do a very nice vacation for $2,500. You know, have your dining, your tickets, a moderate to a deluxe resort, have it all in there. Yeah, it can be done.
Yeah, but even a value can come in at under $2,000.
Yeah,
quick service dining tickets, depending on the ages of the kids. You know, the ages of the kids can kind of throw off the dining a little bit.
Unless you did free dining.
And you know.
Yeah.
And all the resorts get you into the parks.
Yeah.
You know,
exactly.
So whether you stay at Pop or whether you stay at the Grand, you know, you're still getting into the same Magic Kingdom, you know, the same Animal Kingdom, you know, same Epcot. So
there's not a separate
one.
Yeah,
I mean, you know, right. I mean, you know, the sky's the limit. I mean,
don't encourage people. They'll start
what?
They'll start wanting separate resorts for deluxe level guests.
Oh. You mean different parks?
I mean separate parks, sorry. It's late.
Okay. All right. Some of mine are silly. Some of them are actual inquiries that I get from clients. And the first one, some people comment about the weather to the point of blaming Disney for the weather, whether it's the heat or the rain. And please understand that Disney has nothing to do with the weather. They don't control it. when I was working there, I would hear the question. I heard it probably twice, maybe three times, and I couldn't believe it. When does Disney close the roof? Or something along those lines, like it was some sort of superdome. And that was a bit ridiculous. So there is no roof over the Magic Kingdom. So, seriously.
It's like, what was that?
Oh,
what was that movie with Jim Carrey? With the Truman Show?
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It's like the Truman Show, you know, where, mm-hmm. where you know, you're making it rain and stuff. Yes. Yeah, totally. Exactly. And I know it can feel that way. I mean, you know, you get inside the resorts and you know, you get inside the parks and you can kind of shut off the real world for a while.
Mm-hmm.
But no, it is still real sky and real trees and everything.
Right.
And yeah. So yeah, that is kind of funny. And
maybe it only happened once, and I just told the story so many times because it was so funny. Maybe it was only once.
Well, I have seen that question posed in one form or another on various Disney boards.
Yeah.
So. I think that is a more common misconception than
well, it's actually somewhat related to people. It's actually somewhat related to people wanting refunds if the weather's bad. So you know, people are sort of like, you know, hey, if it's raining, do I get a refund? Or if it's unseasonably cold, am I going to get a refund? I mean, I've actually seen people ask that. Not any of our clients, but on message boards, and the answer is no.
Okay,
be Bob, prepared.
Throw another one at us.
I don't want to go to Disney World because it's just like every other amusement park. You know, I have a zoo in my town. Why would I want to see the Animal Kingdom? Or, you know, I have a you know, whatever, you know, kind of, you know.
Six Flags or I don't want to.
Bill Jones, yeah. You know, Bill Jones, you know, amusement park and thrill ride park in my town, you know, so I don't need to go to Disney World. Yes, you do, because it's not just like every other amusement park. And I hesitate to even call it an amusement park as much as
it's a,
you know,
theme park.
A resort destination. A theme park destination.
Right.
And it's interesting because I had a client at one point who they recently traveled a couple months ago, and the grandfather who went along, you know, I think he was happy to go along, but I think he just kind of expected it to be, you know, average. And he recently called me the other day and said, you know, we are going to have to book another trip very soon because there is just something about Walt Disney World. He's like, I don't know what it is, but I just felt like I need to go back and take another look. And so, yeah, it's much more, and I'm not sure any of us can do a good job of describing it here, but
no.
There's far more care taken than your average park. the attractions are better. But beyond all of that, it's there's something special about it.
Yeah. The employees are better. I mean, you know, there's absolutely nothing wrong with the employees at Universal, but they're just a bit better at Disney World. And in fact, in some cases, I'd say considerably better. And I think that does make a big difference. You know, if you have people out there who are enjoying their job and who are doing a really good job of it, you know, that can have a huge effect on your experience.
It can.
I would agree.
Okay. Not to mention the theming is just generally better.
It's all about theme and total immersion and taking you away to somewhere else. All right, Chris, let's do another one.
Okay, mine is you cannot pool hop. Sometimes people will ask, and I don't know why this question gets asked over and over again, but people will say, well, I'm staying at the Poly. Can I swim at, you know, at the beach club? No, you can't. You can't pool hop at any resort. Some DVC owners can pool hop, but those resorts are limited too. So otherwise, normal guests can't pool hop.
What does it mean to pool hop?
Just to go from, you know, to use another resort's pool.
Okay. Just to clarify, just in case someone didn't know.
Yes, because some people might be, you know, not even, never even heard of it. You make a point.
Yeah, and I think that I've heard when Disney first opened and it was just, you know, one or two resorts that they did allow that. If they did at one point, they no longer do.
The next one for me is fast passes and how they work and how they don't work. And it's not Universal where you can buy a special pass which gets you, you know, the shorter lines. It's something that anyone who goes into the park can get. You use your park ticket or your Key to the World card, and you can go to certain rides, and they're well marked, and they're marked on the maps as well. And you can get a fast pass ticket. And this fast pass is going to tell you what time to come back to the ride, and it will also tell you what time you can get another fast pass. And so if it's 10 a.m. and it says come back at 11:30, you go off and you ride something, and then you come back to your fast pass attraction, and you go on that. You go into the special line, and it's well marked, and it will announce, it has listed the time, the return time, and you cannot come in before your return time. You can go in after your return time, and if it's some cast members have kind of cracked down or gotten just very selective, I don't know the right word, mean about not letting you in 6-7 hours later. But I personally have never had a problem, but I've had guests or clients tell me, yeah, they wouldn't let us back in. They said that it was, you know, 8 hours ago and we should have come back somewhat close to our time. Because that does mess up the system.
I've never had a problem either. Yeah.
I had one client tell me that.
Well, but yes, I mean, I would agree that you can return. I mean, if it says, you know, return between, you know, 11 and 1, if it's, you know, 1:30, don't feel like you have to throw off the fast pass. You can still come back.
Right.
But yes, and even if you can use it 5 or 6 hours beyond that time, you can only use it for the day that you got the fast pass. So don't think you can save them up and then use them the next day.
No, they do check the dates.
The date is printed on them.
Yep.
Yes.
And also, if you get to the end of the day and you've got a couple of fast passes burning a hole in your pocket and you just too pooped and you don't want to do it, give them to someone. There's nothing wrong with doing that. They're not specific to your ticket. They just need to show those to get into the fast lane and to get onto the ride. So that's how that works. Let's
I like
go to
that one.
Bob.
My next one is a misconception that people have is that Disney World is just for kids. And, you know, I don't have any kids. Why would I even go? And the reality is there's a ton of stuff for adults to do. you know, first of all, many of the attractions are thrill ride attractions, like Expedition Everest, Mission Space, Test Track, even Star Tours, you know, or Rock and Roller Coaster. Those are all great attractions that would appeal to, you know, adults. There's also, you know, Disney World has tried very, very hard to appeal to adults because they realize, you know, little people are coming down with adults. So to that extent, there is golfing, you know, there is world-class dining and shopping. There's, you know, you can rent watercraft, you can go parasailing, you can go horseback riding. So tons of activities. I mean, I would even venture to say that you don't have to set foot in any of the parks and you would still find plenty to do. I mean, you could have a golf vacation, you know, and just do that. So it's not just all kiddie rides. There's plenty of stuff to do for every member of the family.
And it's good if you're a young adult, you know, before kids, and there's nothing wrong with going to Disney World with your spouse after the kids are gone.
No, I think that's great. I mean, I saw a couple like that just this past weekend, and they must late 60s, early 70s, and they were in line for Big Thunder Mountain. I thought that was awesome.
Chris, what's your next one?
My next one is the misconception that you can apply more than one discount at a time. Every now and then I get someone who emails me or calls me and asks me if they can do that. And the answer is no. Disney only allows you to apply one discount to your booking. So make sure you do all the numbers and find out which one is best for you and then apply that.
And if you're not sure how the numbers can be calculated or, you know, if you're not sure if you're calculating everything correctly, call a travel agent. All right, my next one is I get asked or told, when I ask them what resort do you want, I want to stay in the Magic Kingdom. And that was possible a year ago. 2 years ago. Is it 2 years? If you got selected.
Yep.
Wow, 2 years. You can't stay in the Magic Kingdom. A lot of people refer to the whole Walt Disney World Resort as the Magic Kingdom. And the Magic Kingdom is a specific park. And you aren't allowed to stay in there. They do have the room up in Cinderella's Castle for one family, but you can't get that. Just don't even ask, because you can't. And I think what they mean, sometimes they mean they want something close to the Magic Kingdom or on the monorail, and other times they're just referring to property in general. So they're saying, I want to stay on property, but you cannot stay in the Magic Kingdom. And there's a difference between the Magic Kingdom and Walt Disney World Resort. It's the whole thing is not called the Magic Kingdom.
That is a pet peeve of mine, yes.
Yeah, we're going to go to the Magic Kingdom. Okay, great. And then we're going to go to the World Showcase. Well, no, that's not in the Magic Kingdom. All right, Bob, do another one.
It's kind of a two-parter, I guess, and I don't know how closely related they are, but I'll throw it out there. The first part is, why do I need to go? You know, again, I've already been one time. I've already seen everything. You know, and with that, the other thing that I hear a lot from people is, well, we would love to go, but my kids are little; they won't remember it.
Mm-hmm.
Taking these separately, as to the first one, things are constantly changing there. I mean, new rides and attractions are always going in, like the new Star Tours being updated or the new Fantasyland expansion coming next year. So there are tons of changes. Even if they never changed anything, I can guarantee that you could go hundreds of times and you would still not be able to experience everything and see everything and do everything. Yeah. And I can tell you that because I've been hundreds of times and I still haven't, you know, seen and done everything. It's impossible. And
you've got Bob
there's all kinds of different, There's all kinds of different events around the year. I mean, yeah. There's the Not So Scary Halloween Party. There's the Food and Wine Festival. There's holidays, you know, at the theme parks. And that's Flower and Garden Festival. So there's Star Wars Weekend. So
different parades.
Different shows, different parades, different times of years to go that will totally change your experience. So, yes, you do need to go more than once.
And if you went 10 years ago, it's not the same thing.
It's different.
It's very different. Yeah.
It is very different. Well, and then to the second part, as far as my kids won't remember it. Well, you'd be surprised. I mean, I guess it depends on the kid. I don't remember anything before age 8. I don't know why. I think I was abducted by aliens. You know, I don't know, but I really can't remember. Yes, I know. It explains a lot, Chris. I know. But I know that younger kids can remember. I mean, 2 and 3 year olds can remember things. Even if they can't, it's not about what they remember. It's about what you remember. And it's about the memories you make together as a family.
I do have to say, I always say, if you're only going to go on one or two trips, don't waste those one or two trips on kids who are like 4 and under. And just because, you know, not everyone is going to go frequently.
Right.
So you do want them to kind of remember it. And also, there's just a limited amount of stuff like a 3-year-old can do in the parks. So.
Mm-hmm. But I'm also seeing Bob's side. I agree both ways. But I think these days, since pictures are so much easier to take and you take them more freely, like Amber will see a picture of when we went to the petting zoo when she was 2 or 3, and she remembers what she sees in the pictures. So I don't know how much of it is memory or how much of it is seeing the pictures over and over and remembering the pictures. And so I think if you take a kid who is, 2 or 3 years old, where you question if they're going to remember it, and you have lots of pictures, they're still going to feel like they remember it by looking at it, and it's almost brainwashing. But they still get a kick out of...
Well, they did that at Guantanamo Bay, too.
And they get a kick out of, I was here and I did this, and I got to ride Dumbo, and... just the excitement.
And with younger kids, and Chris, you make a valid point. I mean, if this is your once in a lifetime, you know you're not going to be able to get back trip, I think you have a valid point. I mean, maybe you don't want to go with a younger child, but if you do have the opportunity to go and you know you're going to come again, with younger kids, one of the things that's nice is a lot of it is so magical to them. I mean, Mickey, it really is Mickey. You know, it's not a short guy in a costume, and the princesses are real and the pirates are real. And, all of that is true. So you get to see it through their eyes in a way that you no longer can.
Right.
So
that's true. That's why I always say that every trip is different regardless. Even if you go 3 times a year, each one of those trips is going to be different based on what's going on, who you're with,
where you're at
that point in your life. Yeah. So you can, I never get bored with it. But that may mean that there's something wrong with me. I'm not going to rule that out.
It's very big of you.
I knew it.
Thank you.
We have it on tape now.
Yes, it is recorded.
Well, Bob, I'm just sharing because you admitted you were abducted by aliens as a child, so I wanted to share too. Well, don't make me regret it.
I should tell. No. I really do think something. Anyway, we're getting off topic.
You're so weird. We'll look into that later. That's another show.
Let me just add this. I went to the doctor years ago, for a physical before I moved.
Remember the Florida Bar Association.
And he says to me, well, you never told me on your medical forms that you had your tonsils taken out. And I said, doctor, I've never had my tonsils taken out. And he said, well, you don't have any. So I'm pretty sure I had them as a kid, and I don't have them now, so I think I was the victim of an alien abduction and experiment.
Oh, boy.
And you're not worried that the Florida Bar Association is going to use this as evidence against you at some point
to disbar
you? They've already
admitted me. They've
well, you know, there's always
me.
That they could always take it away, Bob.
That is true. It does say on the back of the card I have to surrender it at any time. So
exactly.
Anyway.
Wow. You hear a knock at the door in another hour.
Right.
Okay. I don't know who we did last.
It was me.
It was you. So that means I'm up.
Oh. Yeah, it's Bob. Sorry.
Was it Bob?
Yeah, because it was me about the children,
oh, yeah,
you know,
had your
children.
2 point.
And it's alien abduction.
It's just a valid theory.
Oh.
Yeah, Bob, it's totally valid.
The tonsil thing is weird, I'll give you that. But did you even talk to your parents to find out if they had your tonsils out and you just don't remember?
Yeah. Yes. And my mother swears I never had my tonsils taken out.
Did you get a second opinion to see if you actually have tonsils?
Well, no, but I mean, I think it would be pretty obvious for a doctor. I mean, isn't that something
you're
you
a lawyer?
Learn, like,
you're not a doctor. You don't know these things.
I did stay at the Waldorf over the weekend, so. You know.
Okay. Yeah. All right. Okay, so that was Bob, so that means it's Chris's turn.
Okay. This is one of my favorite misconceptions, and that is that the food is bad. The food's great. There's all kinds of food. Yes, there's some bad food. But overall, I would say the food is pretty good. There's even fairly good quick service if you don't overdo it and eat it every day, every single day you're there. And the table service restaurants are really, really good overall. So definitely don't miss out on the food.
You took mine. Okay.
I'm going to piggyback on that. And my next one is, the dining reservations have to be made 180 days in advance. And sometimes I will tell clients, and sometimes these are friends of mine, or I actually did this with family once. And we were talking about a vacation that was a good 8 months away. And I said, well, let's start talking about your dining. And he said, well, I'll just figure out what I'll do when I get there. And he was dead serious, and he travels a lot, and you know, why would you try to plan what you're going to eat half a year ahead of time? And I said, you're not going to get in anywhere else. You need to do this. You need to give me your credit card number so I can put Akershus on hold and, you know, do the guarantee. And he trusted me, and I got the reservations, but he just couldn't believe that I was going to get up and get on the horn 180 days out, that I calculate it. 175 days, not good enough. You have to be on the phone 180 days exactly. I said, yes, you do. For certain restaurants, you certainly do. And he has a young son, and they were going to do character dinings and things like that. They ended up getting a good selection, and it worked out. But definitely listen when you're told that you need to make your reservations that early, especially if you want some of the popular ones. And what are some of the popular ones? Chris, give me two popular ones.
Cinderella's Royal Table and Le Cellier. If you don't get those at 7 o'clock, 180 days out, you pretty much can forget it. Unless it's dinner time at Cinderella's Royal Table, you've got a couple days leeway on that one. But breakfast and lunch are just going to be gone.
Bob, what else?
Pretty close to that, I would add Chef Mickey's is very popular.
Yeah.
With a lot of families, and California Grill.
Mm-hmm. That's been popular. Hard to get lately. That has been really hard to get. Usually, I find that signature restaurants don't fill up right away, but for some reason, California Grill lately, I've been having a very hard time getting it. Ohana's been hard to get lately.
And Le Cellier.
The thing is, I notice that when I tell people, that they have to make their reservations at 180 days out. And it's not so much clients. It's more like people I sort of meet or neighbors or whatever. They're kind of like, really? Like they act like they don't believe me. They have the same reaction when I hand them an unofficial guide. They're like, you want me to read this book for Disneyland? You know, it's the same sort of like incredulous sort of reaction. They don't believe it.
And I don't want anyone to think that we're making fun of anyone that is naive when it comes to Disney. We're just pointing out some of these misconceptions. So we giggle a little, but, you know, it's a strange animal, Disney is, and we got to teach you how to make it work.
I will say that as a former Floridian, I never made reservations, and I can remember so many times standing out in front of Liberty Tree Tavern going, let me in, please. So now, you know, because I never did it either, so I've learned my lesson. I make them.
And it's hard as a Florida resident.
Yeah, it is hard if you live there.
Bob, what's your next one?
Well, since you both took my last one, I'll come up with another one.
What did we take?
And that is the whole theme park food thing.
Okay.
So we were all thinking the same thing. It's funny. but another one that I hear is that you know, a lot of people have a misconception that staying off-site is somehow always a better value. And that is not necessarily the case. You have to... Again, a lot of it depends on your accommodations. It depends on the promotions that are out and the time of year you're going. But you also have to look at the additional costs. If you stay off-site, it means, for example, you won't be able to use Magical Express to get to your resort. So you'll have to either rent a car or get a shuttle or something to your property. And then if you are staying in a rental home or something, well, how are you getting to the parks? You know, maybe again, that's a rental car that could add a couple hundred dollars to your cost. And then you're going to have to pay for parking at the park. So that's another $14 a day. You know, or you may find that you're at a hotel that charges, you know, valet fees and that are $20 a day plus other resort taxes. Yeah, it's just, you know, shocking. And, you know, those fees can add up. And then, of course, like I had mentioned a little earlier, you lose the benefits of staying off-site at, you know, sometimes if you stay off-site, you know, you don't have the package delivery to your resort. You don't have the extra magic hours necessarily, you know, unless you're at like a Good Neighbor hotel or something like the Swan or Dolphin. You know, so, you know, you can't take advantage of these things. And when you add it up, it's not the great value that you thought it was. So,
well, when you consider extra magic hours and just the whole surrounding, the ease of the transportation, so many things that you get from staying at a Disney resort that you just don't.
Oh, and those extra magic hours, I mean, in the summertime, when they stay open late like that, and I know holiday time, like July 4th, they'll probably stay open at the Magic Kingdom again, you know, late 2-3 in the morning. And that really does come in handy when it's so hot during the day and the lines for some of these rides are, you know, 70 minutes, 90 minutes, and you're thinking, I just can't do this. You know, well, you know, the park closes down to everyone except, you know, people staying on property. Lines are going to be shorter. It's cooler. And, you know, 3 hours at night in one of those parks, you can get a lot done. I mean, so,
and then you sleep in the next day.
Or, you know, that first hour in the morning. Yeah. Or, you know, that first hour in the morning, you can get a lot done in those first couple of hours before the park gets crowded if you're more of a morning person. So, yeah, think of the tangible and intangible costs when weighing out your options. And don't immediately presume that you have to stay off-site and that it's always a better deal, because it's not.
Okay, Chris, give me another one.
Okay, mine is sort of a little similar to Bob's, which is the misconception that you can't afford to stay on-site. At the given the price of the values, anyone can afford to stay on-site. You're paying about $70 to $80 to $90 a night, depending on the season and the discount. It's very affordable. So, and as Bob pointed out, it's really worth it when you consider that you get free parking, that you're sort of inside the Disney bubble, It's really worth the money, I think.
The bubble with the dome that closes?
Yeah, absolutely, where they control the weather.
Okay.
And hopefully no aliens will get in to, you know, take away your tonsils.
Is that going to be one of the inside jokes?
I hope not.
Wow. One of those future referenced jokes. Okay, and my last one is pretty generic, and it's you can't wing Disney World very easily. If you're going to do a trip to Disney World, you need to do some research. And I think, Chris, you touched on this. But there's so much to do, and we try to help you. If you have questions, certainly email us, and we'll do our best to answer those questions. But it's overwhelming between the four parks. You've got two water parks. You've got golf. You've got all these extra activities. You've got food, which is all-consuming.
At least to us.
It is.
Yeah.
You know, even just trying to figure out how to meet the characters that you want, knowing where to go and when and how. And, you know, you don't just – it's not the old days where you – are walking down the street and there you see Mickey Mouse and, you know, it's different. It's planned. Yeah. It's organized. There's structure. And if you don't know how to play the game, you're in trouble.
I didn't plan my last trip that I went on the last, you know, 2 weeks ago. It was kind of a bad trip. And I've been enough times that I know pretty much everything, but it was sort of a last minute trip. I only had like a month or so. And I thought, I'll just wing it. I didn't pack carefully. I didn't plan anything carefully. And the weekend was kind of, it was stressful. And that's coming from someone who goes a lot and who's been a lot of times. You have to plan. You have to plan every trip, even if it's a little short trip and you have a lot of experience. So it was kind of bad.
Maybe we should have a show on how to plan and when to do what and what to pack and...
Yeah,
just a general itinerary for a standard, you know.
That's actually not a bad idea because, you know, I think, you know, we've probably all heard stories from somebody that, oh, we went to Disney and never again, we had the worst time.
Yeah.
And then, you know, you start talking about, well, did you do this? Did you do that? No,
no
what's that?
No one told me.
Well, what's FastPass? What's FastPass? What's, you know, oh, yeah. There are other parks?
I went to get a FastPass and they were sold out. I didn't know. We slept in that morning.
Right. You know, and had no idea about extra magic hours or didn't know about dining, and so they couldn't get into anything that they wanted or, you know, were unprepared for the, you know, change in the weather. Like, you know, if you go in December, you never know what you're going to get. Yeah, and so, you know, you hate to see somebody spend $1,500, $2,000, $2,500, whatever it is, and not have a good time. But yeah, I mean, your simplest point is the best one. Plan, plan, plan. Take the time to plan.
Some people plan down to potty breaks, you know, down to the 15-minute intervals, 5-minute intervals. I can't plan like that either. Well, I can't follow a plan like that.
Right.
Because you can't account for all the lines. You can predict and you can do your best and have some flexibility, but go on this ride, get a pretzel, and go potty. You can't plan like that, but you do need to have a general idea of what to do when. You need a game plan.
I never used to do my own spreadsheet, and I started doing them for clients, and I'm totally sold on them because even if you don't like have everything in detail, having all your information on one page, all your reservations, all your dining, you know, confirmation numbers, everything, I think is kind of really smart. So I'm actually going to turn around and become a better planner for my own self. I can plan for other people, but for some reason I kind of wing it. So that's my new thing for my trip in December. I really want to take the time to plan.
I don't take the time to plan my own stuff either. Steve will. Steve will write down. He knows exactly what we're doing when, and he's just good at that.
I'd actually love to see one of Steve's planning sheets.
It's not something to write home about. It's very rough, but he at least knows, you know, what days we're going to go to the outlet mall, and then what days we're going to go to the kingdom, what day we're going to do a little resort hopping, a shopping day, downtown Disney. He knows roughly quarter days, maybe half days, what we're doing.
That's good.
But yeah, it is good. He's got that down. I think we're running a little late on time. Let's hold the listener questions for the next show, and we'll talk about those then. And we'll wrap it up right here for this week's show. You can download our shows at mousechat.net and also from iTunes. Please send us your comments and questions. And you know what? Why don't you send us some of your show ideas?
Oh, that'd be great.
I think that'd be fun. But yes, send those to comments.
We're always looking for ideas.
Yeah, comments at mousechat.net. You know, it was great to hear that people like the top five lists. And what do you want to hear our top five of? So we'll do that. We could do top five movies. It's still Disney. We could do that.
Could do that.
We could. But anyway, you know, think outside the box and send us your ideas and join us here again next week on Mouse Chat.